Then he kept his body in position long enough to break his neck by the revolution of the wheel. So he made his escape by means of the very wagon which was carrying him to his punishment. When a man desires to burst forth and take his departure, nothing stands in his way. It is an open space in which nature guards us. When our plight is such as to permit it, we may look about us for an easy exit. If you have many opportunities ready to hand, by means of which you may liberate yourself, you may make a selection and think over the best way of gaining freedom. But if a chance is hard to find, instead of the best, snatch the next best, even though it be something unheard of, something new. If you do not lack the courage, you will not lack the cleverness to die. See how even the lowest class of slave, when suffering goads him on, is aroused and discovers a way to deceive even the most watchful guards. He is truly great, who not only has given himself the order to die, but has also found the means. I have promised you, however, some more illustrations drawn from the same games. During the second event, in a sham sea fight, one of the barbarians sank deep into his own throat a spear which had been given him for use against his foe. "Why, oh why," he said, "have I not long ago escaped from all this torture and all this mockery? Why should I be armed and yet wait for death to come?" This exhibition was all the more striking because of the lesson men learned from it, that dying is more honorable than killing. What then? If such a spirit is possessed by abandoned and dangerous men, shall it not be possessed also by those who have trained themselves to meet such contingencies by long meditation, and by reason, the mistress of all things? It is reason which teaches us that fate has various ways of approach, but the same end, and that it makes no difference at what point the inevitable event begins. Reason, too, advises us to die, if we may, according to our taste. If this cannot be, she advises us to die according to our ability, and to seize upon whatever means shall offer itself for doing violence to ourselves. It is criminal to live by robbery, but, on the other hand, it is most noble to die by robbery. Farewell. Letter 71. On the Supreme Good. You are continually referring special questions to me, forgetting that a vast stretch of sea sunders us. Since, however, the value of advice depends mostly on the time when it is given, it must necessarily result that by the time my opinion on certain matters reaches you, the opposite opinion is the better. For advice conforms to circumstances, and our circumstances are carried along, or rather whirled along. Accordingly, advice should be produced at short notice, and even this is too late. It should grow while we work, as the saying is. And I propose to show you how you may discover the method. As often as you wish to know what is to be avoided or what is to be sought, consider its relation to the supreme good, to the purpose of your whole life. For whatever we do ought to be in harmony with this. No man can set in order the details unless he has already set before himself the chief purpose of his life. The artist may have his colors all prepared, but he cannot produce a likeness unless he has already made up his mind what he wishes to paint. The reason we make mistakes is because we all consider the parts of life, but never life as a whole. The archer must know what he is seeking to hit. Then he must aim and control the weapon by his skill. Our plans miscarry because they have no aim. When a man does not know what harbor he is making for, no wind is the right wind. Chance must necessarily have great influence over our lives, because we live by chance. It is the case with certain men, however, that they do not know that they know certain things. Just as we often go searching for those who stand beside us, so we are apt to forget that the goal of the supreme good lies near us. To infer the nature of this supreme good, one does not need many words or any roundabout discussion. It should be pointed out with the forefinger, so to speak, and not be dissipated into many parts. For what good is there in breaking it up into tiny bits when you can say, the supreme good is that which is honorable? Besides, and you may be still more surprised at this, that which is honorable is the only good. All other goods are alloyed and debased. If you once convince yourself of this, and if you come to love virtue devotedly, for mere loving is not enough, anything that has been touched by virtue will be fraught with blessing and prosperity for you, no matter how it shall be regarded by others. Torture, if only, as you lie suffering, you are more calm in mind than your very torturer. Illness, if only you curse not fortune and yield not to the disease. In short, all those things which others regard as ills will become manageable and will end in good if you succeed in rising above them. Let this once be clear, that there is nothing good except that which is honorable, and all hardships will have a just title to the name of goods when once virtue has made them honorable. Many think that we Stoics are holding out expectations greater than our human lot admits of, and they have a right to think so, for they have regard to the body only. But let them turn back to the soul, and they will soon measure man by the standard of God. Rouse yourself, most excellent Lucilius, and leave off all this wordplay of the philosophers, who reduce a most glorious subject to a matter of syllables, and lower and